In today's episode...
So what they did is they just scraped the full web. This is still a bit of an illegal legal situation because I think they even scraped some copyrighted things, but that's another discussion for another day, I believe. Where they got images and they got the alt text of the image. So basically, they trained the AI to understand, okay, this image is about this. So they did it with a lot of them. So then it kind of understands, okay, if you type in, I want a beach on Bali at sunset, it knows what the output is.
All right, welcome to another episode of Creator Lab. I have a special guest here today, Danny Postma. Welcome to the show, my man.
Thank you so much for having me. Finally, good to hear, talk to you instead of hearing you in my ears for the last year.
There we go. It's a cool story because we just had Tom Osman on the show who, you know, we talked about AI and all this stuff, and he's really, he's one of the most curious people I know in tech, and we talked about these core use cases and he kept referencing your name. He's like, oh yeah, Danny Postma did this, profilepicture.ai, and there's so many projects, and I was like, all right, I need to get Danny on the show. So I went to look you up on Twitter. I'd heard your name before, but I saw you already following me and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And I DM'd you and you were like, oh, I listened to NIA already. So that was kind of a nice little moment for us, and yeah, good to have you on. And since then, I've been looking at all the cool, crazy stuff you've been working on. So I'm going to call out a few high-level things. I think we're going to talk about how you describe yourself in a minute. We'll get philosophical. But from the outside, I saw you sold Headlime for more than seven figures to Jasper.ai, which is a huge player in the AI space. You've got other projects called ProfilePicture.ai, StockAI.com, LandingFolio.com, and I'm sure you've had many others in the past as well. But the reason I wanted to bring you on was because you're someone who is not just like theoretically looking at stuff, you're building stuff with the latest technology, specifically in AI. It's obviously a very hot topic, has been a hot topic for a little bit of time, but I think it's become even more hot in the last, you know, couple of years. So I wanted, as someone who's not really technical, I wanted to get someone's perspective like yourself, who's really building in it, to understand the potential of it, share use cases, and just kind of geek out over all that stuff. So yeah, is there anything I missed out before we get into it?
I think that's it. Let's do it.
And so you're also a fellow European, right? So I should share that as well. You're originally from the Netherlands. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, correct.
And you were trying to paint a picture before we started recording of where you're from. So you can share whatever you want in terms of the place, but what is the place like where you grew up?
So it's called Groningen. It's like a average city in the north of Holland, but it's quite far away from everything. Which is nice because it doesn't get that much storage, but I believe there's 200,000 inhabitants and half of them are students. So it's basically like a really young town compared to the average population of Holland. So
nice.
Pretty good place to grow up.
Nice, man. And now we're not going to say, well, I don't know what you're allowed to say where you are right now, but you're not living in the Netherlands anymore. Have you been kind of living like a nomad life, or like what's that situation been like for you?
Yeah, so I used to, I went backpacking for the first time in 2016. And I reckon that if you ever go backpacking, there is no freaking way you will ever go back into normal society ever again because you get ruined after it.
Yeah.
Try to work in Holland. But basically every year I just got like a mini depression in February. I'm basically in Holland, the sun doesn't shine. It's raining for like 2 or 3 months straight. Kept going back to Asia. And in 2019, I decided to just go full nomad around. Sold my house, quit everything, got a really chill freelance job that allowed me to travel and still work for them for 2 days in Holland. So I got lucky with that. And then Corona hit. So basically I was a nomad for 6 months, couldn't do anything for 2 years. And now I basically am like slow nomading in Indonesia. Got a house here, got a wife here, got a dog here.
Slow nomading.
Like slow nomading.
Love it. Yeah, because I know Peter Levels, who's the founder of Nomad List and another, you know, bunch of cool projects as well. He's also doing similar stuff to you in AI, kind of individual guy, just creating cool stuff. Would love to have him on the show, actually. He's awesome. I don't know if you know him, but yeah, we should talk a bit more about his stuff a bit later. I heard him on a podcast talk about the Slow Mad label. Yep. I'm actually curious to go into that because similar to you, I've done like 6 months at a time. Like I was in Argentina, Mexico for a few months. And normally every year now, well, like we're based in Brooklyn in New York, but we tried to do like a month or two at least, and maybe we'll hopefully be doing that in Asia next year. That's the plan. So yeah, if we're in the same place, I'll definitely hit you up. But I'm curious to hear a bit more about that, because I feel like the word nomad worked, like digital nomad is kind of become like almost a negative phrase in a lot of circles. I think if you're, you know, no disrespect to anyone who thinks they're calls themselves digital nomad, but there's like this feeling of like, oh, there's someone who's like in Chiang Mai in Thailand, 22 years old, doing like some sort of random job, but not necessarily the sort of style of stuff you're doing. You said you got a wife, did you say a kid as well?
No, dog.
No kid. Okay.
I mean, it counts as a kid, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly. Close enough, exactly. But yeah, I think it's, I'm just curious to hear what you mean by slow-mad for you. Is that just you go to places for a long period of time? You're not like partying every day? What's the vibe?
I reckon like before when I started out, it would be, okay, because countries have a visa limit, right? So you could go maximum, I reckon, like to every country for 30 days. So people, I think the real digital nomads, they would go to a city, Chiang Mai, for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then they would go to another city, another city, another city. So I reckon it's like, I'd say it's like more like backpacking while you have a job. Maybe I'm like,
yeah. No, I get you. No, that makes sense. With it.
And then I reckon when you get like, after you've been doing that for a while, you kind of get, you want to slow down, you find a place that you really like, or you get stuck because of Corona, blah, blah, blah. So I think if you go slow, Matt, it's probably like 3 months, 4 months in one place, and then you migrate to another place. So you were talking about Peter Levels. I believe he spends like 6 months in Portugal in the summer, then becomes winter and doesn't want to be there. And he goes back to Thailand. And that's basically the slow medding around.
Well, where was the first place you said?
I think he's in Portugal, right?
Oh, Portugal. Yeah.
A lot of people going to Portugal right now.
Yeah, definitely. Well, a beautiful place. All right, so yeah, that's interesting. So I want to bring us to indie hackers in a second as well, because in the intro, before we started recording, I was asking you if the phrase indie hacker is something that resonates with you. I said, would you call yourself an indie hacker? And for people who don't know, like if you can go back to episode I did with Corey Allen, founder of IndieHackers.com, and he sold that to Stripe. But it's essentially an amazing community online where people often share their stuff transparently, launch projects, encourage each other. Very cool community. But again, the flip side of that is often there's a perception of this might be oversimplifying, but kind of very small projects. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but just often like you rarely see like, oh, someone built an indie hacker thing and they actually made a crazy amount of money. And so one of the things I do like about it is it's very transparent. And so I saw you post on Indie Hackers and you talked about Headlime, the country you sold, you said for 7 figures. So I don't know how much you're allowed to share there, but that is over $1 million, right? So that's enough money for most people to be chilling in Bali for a while, or Indonesia, wherever. And so could you tell me a little bit about that idea of Indie Hackers, first of all? Like, does that resonate with you? Did it used to and now it's changed? How do you feel about that?
I think I got lucky to be one of the first wave of indie hackers. I believe like the OGs were Pat with his company, Peter Levels, Cortland. And I think all these people, they already did it on Twitter, but there wasn't like really a name for it until Cortland, he started the IndieHacker.com platform, obviously the podcast, putting people in the spotlight. So I believe I was more like in the second wave of it, where it was still pretty novel to share everything on Twitter. And I started with like 200 followers on it, and I kept sharing all my wins, my losses, my revenue gains, my learnings. And basically I started growing my followers while building Headlime on Twitter while indie hacking, which is a really good marketing way. I think I'm pretty sure like it's become normalized in the sense now that I don't know if the indie hacker word is the correct word anymore, because everyone kind of is indie hacking now. It's very normal to share your progress on Twitter. I don't think the indie hacker platform is around that much anymore. I don't know. You talked with Cortland, indeed. Like, is he still doing it? Is it still?
I think so. It was I did that maybe a year and a half ago or more. I can't remember, but I'm assuming it's still around. I think he's still working on it. I'm not sure. I'm not using it as much as I might have used it a few years ago, which I get might be the point where we're kind of talking about. And this is, again, not throwing shade at them. I think it's a really positive community. But yeah, specifically for you, it doesn't sound like it's completely like a phrase you would use to describe yourself.
No, so huge props for Kotlin for starting this movement, because I one of the reasons I was able to sell Headline was by getting inspired by all those people shipping out in public. It was my marketing channel. So absolutely amazing. So many learnings in the podcast. Though I think like indie hacking for me feels like it's more in the level where you start your journey out. You're still scrapping. You're still trying to launch a bunch of products, but I'm still doing that. So I still feel like I'm indie hacking in that sense, but it's not that scrappy anymore. There's a lot of thought behind it now. I already have the revenue and I can invest my own product. So it feels a little less like hacking and more like maybe like solopreneurship, indiepreneurship, as in, okay, you work on one project yourself. You don't have any employees. It's more like an indie music style. Indie hacking, I guess that's where the name comes
from.
That's
a good
right?
parallel. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
So it's like you don't get a big record label, aka for indie hackers, indiepreneurs. You don't get a big VC to fund your money. You're just trying it out. You're doing it whenever you want. Like I don't work 9 to 5. I work either like 6 to 12. I set my own time zone. Sometimes I work like 12 hours a day. Sometimes I don't work.
Is that 6 a.m. or 6 p.m.?
Yeah, 6 a.m. at the moment.
6 a.m. to 12 p.m.? Or like meaning like midday or midnight?
Yeah, midday indeed. Yeah.
Oh, so you do 6 hours, you're saying?
Yeah, something like that. But now with Provo Picture, obviously, the first week when it went mental, I think I worked like 16 hours a day. But now it's quiet, so I try to slow down a little bit.
Nice.
So I see it more as a, like you get your own control over your own time, your own schedule, which is a lot easier also when you're nomading around, traveling around.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the reason I bring that up is, again, I'm not really a fan of labels anyway. I use them for myself and understand why people use them, but I never truly feel like I'm any label, and I don't like to be boxed in, probably. That's where it comes from. And instead, it sounds kind of fluffy, but I just prefer to focus on like shared values, right? Like, so like when I speak to Cortland, I'm like, wow, like you indie hackers represents living on your own terms, creating stuff independently, owning most of it, stuff like that. And then at the same time, I've spoken to people who've created incredible VC-backed companies too, where I'm like, okay, you needed the VC money, you needed to hire a bunch of people and do that, and that was for a different purpose. So I think they're both amazing.
It's a lifestyle choice, right?
Completely.
When I was building out Headline, if I can jump into it, it's like I was in calls with Andreessen and Hardaway, Sequoia, blah, blah. And I just asked them, like, what is your expectation? And they say, yeah, if we do investment, we want you to IPO. And it's like 80 hours a week working. And I'm at that time, I'm like thinking like, yeah, but I'm not going to do that.
Like, yeah.
80 hours is mental. It's not my lifestyle. So, but you kind of need it. Like if I wanted to compete with Jasper, for example, you need the VC money. So what you say, yeah, it's a choice you have to make. Some businesses, they work with it. Some businesses, they don't work with it. And I think the indie hack is more the mentality of, yeah, I'm hacking around with it. That sense.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, man. Well, so I like that you had shared it was 7 figures. I don't know how much specifics you're allowed to share around that or like to share. But the other thing I noticed here was it 8 months?
Yeah, so I built the first version without GPT-3 in 6 months. And then the GPT-3 version was 3 months from start to finish and sold it. It was mental, dude.
So that was like starting, getting customers, selling all in 8 months.
Yeah, so I went down. Maybe I should give some background. So I think in 2017, me and a friend wrote a ebook with Headline formulas. So basically it was it's basically a template of 200 headlines where you could put your own names inside of it as like a variable. So it would get fit with fitnessapp.com. And then those fitness app and fit would be like a variable, like a product name, stuff like that. And in 2020, I think when the pandemic hit, I was like, I need a product idea. I just learned how to program in 2019. Oh yeah, this was 2019, by the way. I just learned to program. I was like, I need to have some.
Also wild. Sorry, that it's not like you were coding since you were like 12 years old or something, right?
As long as you don't call HTML coding, I learned to code in 2019. Yeah.
That's wild. Okay, that's impressive. We'll come back to the coding part in a minute, but and just to let's give a headline of what Headline was. So it was an AI assistant, would you call it?
Yeah, so it started out as just a little tool where you could type in and it give you headlines. And then in June OpenAI came out with GPT-3, and GPT-3 is a textual generation AI. I think everyone listening to this probably knows it right now. So I rebuilt Headline, the basic version, to the AI version, launched it in December, where basically it would generate headlines, it would generate Facebook ads, Google advertising, landing pages eventually. And I think the killer thing I added was in January was the blog generation. So you could just type out an outline. Okay, this is what the blog is about, and the AI would just write the full blog post for you.
Wow.
Was one of the first ones to go live with it with OpenAI.
And so I think we've skipped ahead a little bit. So let's pretend my grandma's listening to this, RIP. But if she was listening to us talk about AI, we're using kind of like these buzzwords. We talked about GPT-3. You're right. A lot of people listening have heard of this because we've covered it on the pod before. But in simple terms, if you were trying to explain what artificial intelligence is, AI, what is a simple kind of frame for explaining how that actually works in practice?
So what GPT-3 is, it's basically trained on 100 billion parameters, basically Wikipedia, books, everything that's textual on the internet. And it's been trained in such a way how it works in the basic that if you type something, it knows the next word to write. So if you type in the capital of France is, it will send back like 10 options with a scale of, okay, I'm 99% sure it's Paris, I'm 20% sure it's Madrid, for example, so it knows what to write next. So what we are possible to do with it is we can feed it text. So you could feed it, for example, 3 really good Facebook advertisements, and it would get trained to know that if you give it another example, like a description of your product, it knows how to turn that product description into a Facebook ad because it knows from the examples you inputted before it what to do next. So it kind of has like an understanding of what predictive. You give it and knows what to output.
Got
it's
it.
Completely
yeah, no,
mental. That, like it's normal now, mental. But like 2 years ago, this was fucking magic. I was trying it out. I was like, yeah. What the hell is this, man?
No, and I think that was an amazing example to share because I think all of us have obviously used Google search, right? And so a normal frame for that is, you know, Google's been doing AI in air quotes for a long time as well. Obviously, they've been leader in that for a long time. But if you type in the example I gave in the Tom Osman episode, if you heard that, was it used to be just 10 blue links returned and you said, who is David Beckham? It didn't actually understand David Beckham was a football, soccer player, played for Man United and Real Madrid, is married to Victoria Beckham. And over time, they built those entities to not just be text, but an understanding of this is a football player. Football is an umbrella. The umbrella term is sports. Sports are XYZ. And so that sounds like, you know, oh, that makes sense to us as humans. But if you're training a computer to understand that, that is where the word intelligence, I guess, comes from in that context. So another thing I've heard you talk about is people use this phrase training the model. And even now on your Twitter, you've been sharing on your profile picture.ai, I think it is, for you've been kind of retraining it, it sounds like, with new images or something. So we were talking about GPT-3, which is text-based. Now, let's talk a little bit about the visual side. I'm curious, using the visual example, what does it mean to train the model?
So, and I don't know, like, this is my understanding of how I'm using
completely.
It right now. And I kind of, like, I tried to read the white papers, but it's way too academic for me.
Yeah.
So...
No, and I actually think this is the best way because we don't need to know the extra technical stuff. Yeah. We just want to hear, you're actually using it. I'd love to hear how you would explain it anyway.
So together with profile pictures, so what we're using is Stable Diffusion, which is a open sourced text to image generation AI, which basically means you type in something and it outputs a image. So it launched 4 weeks ago, and then 2 weeks ago, I believe, something launched called Dream Booth. And basically what you're able to do is, so the original model is trained on millions and millions of images. Let's go down in. If you go to a website, you have an image, and if you hover over it, it has an alt data, which basically says if it's like a picture of a beach, you hover over it, it says beach in Bali, for example.
Yeah, and just for people who don't know, like if you've probably been on a website where the image didn't load, this used to happen a lot back in the day because the source of the image is disappeared or something, and it would, you'd be able to see the file, the text as well. So that was the alt text.
Yeah. So basically, I think what they did is they got the what GPT-3, what OpenAI is trained on. They've been training it on images, and because the AI already has an understanding of text. So what they did is they just scraped the full web. This is still a bit of an illegal legal situation because I think they even scraped some copyrighted things, but that's another discussion for another day, I believe. Where they got images and they got the alt text of the image. So basically, they trained the AI to understand, okay, this image is about this. So they did it with a lot of them. So then it kind of understands, okay, if you type in, I want a beach on Bali at the sunset, it knows what the output. So now what Dreamboove came out with is you can retrain that model on images you specify. And this is what gets interesting for the profile picture one, because you can train the AI on my face and I can upload 20 pictures of the face. Give it a classification. And if I type something with a text with, for example, a male, it knows to use me and it knows how to put me on a bicycle. It knows me as a Roman soldier, for example, because it gets deep trained on my face or on an object. I could do it with this microphone, for example. You could put the microphone on a beach. You could might put the microphone on a table, stuff like that. So people are going
Danny, just while
that.
We're talking about this, is it possible? Do you have any visuals we could potentially share? I don't know if I don't want to interrupt you, but just curious if even if we're able to share it on the website or something. Yeah, here we go. Here's profilepicture.ai. Yeah. And again, for people who are only listening, which is most of you, you can click through in the show notes. There's a link to the YouTube video here and you can see the visual. Just skip to the timestamp. But yeah, you could keep saying what you were saying. That was
This is basically the training photos that I put in. So this is a few examples of me with a surfboard, me standing. And then I trained the model. So this is, I'm using an API called Astria for this, switching to my own host this week, hopefully, so I have more control over it. But basically I could write down, okay, Danny as a Santa Claus, and it would know how to output me with the Santa Claus around it.
Incredible.
It's quite mental, so I'm trying to...
I'm glad it says Santa Claus, not Sinterklaas. Sorry. That was a Dutch reference.
I'm allowed to mention any of those cultural things anymore.
I just, for the three Dutch listeners, I wanted to let you know, yeah. I know what's going on there. All right, so now this is... What is it? Is this once you're logged in?
Yeah, so this is one of the outputs for me. So in the back end, my magic happens, obviously. So I've been training for the last week. I've been just typing in text into the AI, trying to figure out what kind of things work, what kind of things don't work. I can make the jump to Lexica after this to explain it a little bit. But basically, all these things are different prompts, what you call it. So it's a description. So let's jump straight into it.
And what's Lexica for people who don't know what that is?
Lexica is a visual database of images with prompts. So let's find a hamburger. So to get this image, you type in this into the AI. So for the listeners, it basically says juicy vegan hamburger topped with guacamole, fried onion, 8K resolution, professional food photography, blah, 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 blah. So you're basically telling the AI, I want this with kind of details, and it gives an output of it, right? So it generates these images, and the images are of quite a real looking hamburger, I believe. So with a profile picture,
just to clarify, this picture, which looks like it's very good, is this a completely made up picture?
Yep, 100%. Doesn't exist.
Wow. Okay, I didn't realize that
so
completely.
It's based on the seed. So a seed is basically a randomized thing. So if you would use the same text and the same seed, you would get the same image. So if I would use the same seed and I would change the juicy vegan hamburger to juicy vegan chicken breast or whatever, it would generate in this style the exact same image, but then with a chicken on the hamburger.
So, and just to clarify, where would you now put that prompt? That would be in the API, or can you do that here?
So, yeah. Well, let's make another jump. So one of the applications anyone can use, and this costs 1 cent per image.
Wow.
So again, for the listeners, I'm logging into app.dreamstudio.com, which I think the graphical user interface of the guys who made the AI. So I could copy this text that I saw on Lexica, input it in the Dream Studio in the text field, could set the seed that's there, and then press to generate. And basically what it will do is now it will instruct the AI, okay, I want this kind of thing. And I think it should output the same image right now. If it's using the same AI. Yeah.
Close enough. Yeah. And so you were saying if you could change that to chicken breast and it would be able to do that.
So if we
let's try that out.
Juicy vegan hamburger. Yeah, let's go for it.
Chicken top
and mice,
or just or like chicken leg. Yeah, all right, let's try that.
Let's not do the breast.
This is amazing. I haven't actually done this myself, so this is very cool to see.
So now it uses like the same AI scrambler and it changes the hamburger to chicken. Now suddenly you have a chicken wings with an egg and guacamole on top of it.
Okay, that's brilliant. Again, for people only listening, I definitely recommend you click through and watch this. But okay, so that is a straight up chicken leg that doesn't exist. This is just something that's been designed, and this looks real. This is not like some random like clip art looking thing that like we used to have 10 years ago. This is, you could, you know, obviously the chicken leg, it looks a bit random, but like you were, I'm just trying to think of use cases. If you were someone who is creating recipes, you know, like you're someone who creates menus for people, you know, like in a lot of countries they share visuals of the food before you buy it and stuff like that. Like you could be testing this out like visually before you even make a lot of the stuff.
So I have a customer, he has a point of sale system which basically adds the products to GrabFood, Uber Eats, takeaway. I don't know if you have that in America.
Yeah, we have the same, yeah. We have a lot of takeaway here.
Yeah, half of the restaurants he has as a customer, they don't have pictures of the food. So what he's been doing is he's been using AI generated from my stockai.com website. Let me just show another.
That's incredible. Yeah, yeah, definitely bring that up. So that stock AI is supposed to be what stock images, but made with AI. So they're all unique images.
Yeah, yeah. So what he would do
is,
so he uses stock AI. Let's hope it works. You would just type in a description of salmon fillet on, what the hell is this?
On quinoa or something.
Fried rice with coriander. You would type that in. He would put it as a food photo on Uber Eats for the customers. And he says, literally, no one has any clue it's AI. Conversion rate's been going up for his restaurant. So he's now trying to integrate it into his point of sale system. But anyone that doesn't have food photos is just using AI generated food.
Wow. Because that's wild.
Because you put in the description. So you can be like, okay, this is a grilled salmon on this. You describe it exactly. So it will look like the food that he's cooking, right?
That's incredible. Yeah, I mean, especially something like that, which is a fairly straightforward. It's not like extra creative. It's just like, you know, salmon fillet on rice or something. All right, so let's go back to, let me just pull up my note here, because I'd love to see more examples in a bit. That is awesome, by the way. Thanks for sharing that, because that's a lot more helpful than just the abstract talking about it. So those are already, in a few minutes, you've shown me three different use cases. You came up with profile pictures, headlines before that, and you know, copy for marketing use cases, stock photos. You've got another one, landing folio, which I assume is to do with landing pages or something.
Yep. Got a tattoo one to generate tattoo arts.
Incredible. So let's go into that process a little bit, because I want to go into the fact that you only started coding 2019, you said. And you knew before that, you came from a design background, I believe, before that, right? Or like landing page optimization, conversion rate optimization.
Started as web design, pivoted kind of to conversion optimization marketing. Did it for a few years, got bored with it. I got bored pretty quickly. And realized that, if you cannot program, it's kind of annoying to launch your own products, especially if you're trying to indie hack. Like, you can do no code now, but back then no code wasn't that well. So taught myself to program in 2019.
I'm curious to get your take. If you didn't already know, you know, HTML, CSS, I'm assuming you knew. Was that more like you editing stuff, or you needed to know that very inside out? Because I know CSS, you're saying HTML doesn't count as proper coding, but still it shows some proficiency in some learning what's in, you know, formats there are and stuff like that. So sorry, I'm using the complete wrong word. I know I had to use HTML too, but maybe syntax is the word I'm looking for. But anyway, tag, a head tag, you know, body tag, you know, all that sort of stuff. So you at least understand, this is how a computer reads code and it displays it in a web browser. That's at least some understanding. But I'm curious, like, if someone's listening to this, which a lot of people listening to this are going to say, this is really cool, I want to play with this. how do I do that? Now, if you're that person, what would you recommend to them? I guess if you think of a decision tree, the first is, should I learn to code or not? And I'm curious, before we go down the rabbit hole of what to do if you want to learn to code, how would you decide on that? I guess, how did you decide on that?
I mean, you need to like computers. You need to be the kind of person. If you're not the kind of person who likes to work with computers that much, you shouldn't learn to program, because Basically you're just talking 24/7 to a computer.
That's a great way to describe it. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like a language, right? So I think there's two routes. Like if you're more a marketing kind of guy, then you're really lucky, because these days you can make anything with no code. Webflow is super, super good. Most of these AI tools are APIs these days. Like, you can try to self-host it. Good luck, because it's a waste of time, to be honest, at the moment now, because the APIs are so easy. So you could go to Astrea.com, which is the Dreamweaver application. You could go to Replicate, Hugging Face, and just dropping a few names. And basically hook a tool, like a no-code tool, like Webflow or Bubble. Bubble. So you could
Bubble's
hook it up.
Bubble's a dating app.
Probably cannot hook that up to AI. Yeah.
That'll be a different sort of AI. Yeah.
I reckon, like, if you want to go that way, you can just go to Webflow, plug in the APIs, and you could do everything drag and drop styled way. I'm pretty sure you could recreate
using this AI. Using what you're really.
Yeah, because in the basis, it's like when I launched the profile picture one, it was really easy, in the sense that it's just calling an API and then sending back the results. Now, obviously, I had to build this whole infrastructure around for scaling and stuff like that. So, but in the basis is you're pulling an API, and basically an API for the listeners, not like, it's another company that already does the hard stuff for you, and you can just send a message to them and they will send a message back to you. So you could, the Dream Studio example, where I showed you the chicken leg, right? They have an API, so you can just send the text you want, and 5 seconds later, it sends back the image to you. So you could make a little no-code tool in Bubble and then display that for different kind of users.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. So the ones you just showed me, those are built from scratch though. They're not using Webflow or something like that.
No, because once you, if you go programming, it's way faster, because you can copy paste all the things, you know how to program it, but you could do it without programming, definitely.
Got it. And so I was sharing a few of these examples with a friend of mine who's a technical person who, you know, he is technical enough to create some of this stuff, but I think he works in a big company. So he was basically saying that doesn't seem very defensible, because anyone can spin this up, which is kind of what you're saying as well. Like, it seems fairly straightforward. I don't think that means you shouldn't do them, and you can't actually make the most of the opportunity still. I also think it means that the front end user interface, which you seem to have a good background in, given your conversion rate optimization stuff, you also have a background in the psychology of copywriting, and which I think is very important for stuff like this. So I'm curious, if you were telling someone to learn this stuff, would you say that is more important to learn than coding yourself? And just find someone to partner with on this? Or I'm just curious to get your take on that, because it's not a one size fits all, but curious at what you would weight them as.
Let's say it this way: it took me 6 months full time to learn to code. It's pretty, especially in these days. Like, before it was PHP and you could just write it and upload it and be done with it. And now with all the frameworks, it's pretty hard. I think there was two questions you had. So pretty sure you can all make it without code, but you're going to run into scaling issues eventually. If you want to have full control over it, coding is always the best way to go, because you can absolutely customize it 100%. You're not, what's the English word for it? You're not susceptible to the platform where you're building on, because basically they can slow you down. They can make a change. You need to 100% own it, which is why I'm also trying to switch away from the APIs now to my own hosted versions. You just want full control over it once it's
got it.
But to validate an idea, and to go from zero to one, you could probably no code it and then maybe hire a developer, partner up with a developer once it starts working. But yeah, these AI tools, Jasper, for example, copy.ai. I mean, Jasper is a unicorn, but there's 100. Like, when I launched Headline, there were 50 other people doing the exact same things. And it all comes down to are you good at marketing? And do you have a good graphical user interface? Those are, I think, the most important things to have now in AI. Or the third one is privately trained models, like Lexica is, for example, doing like highly trained that other people don't have access to that's private right now. I think those are the three most important parts for AI. Got it.
And so when you say that, do you mean really picking a specific use case and training a model on a particular vertical or something like that? Is that what you mean? Or what do you mean by that last one?
Let me, in the background, search an example for you. So Sarif Shamin, he's working on, so he's the founder of Lexica. Where's my Zoom channel? He is working on building his own model, which basically means he is training his own open source model to be private. So he's being able to generate insanely high quality photos like this. This is
just
AI.
These aren't real people.
This is not real people.
Jesus Christ. That is good. So could you just go back up to someone else?
So this is interior. This doesn't exist. This is AI.
Wow.
It's mental, right? So
super high quality. I mean, that could be on an Instagram, you know, Architect's Digest vibe. Yeah. This looks like a real person who works at Tesla.
Right? So he's making his own model and it's called Lexica Aperture, which is, so he only has it. I wonder if he's going to expose it as an API so we can use it or not. But this is the unique part for him. Like if he keeps this model private, he has the most high quality output of portrait photos, interior photos, for example. So then you suddenly have an edge over all the other people because currently there's an issue with the AI. Like it's not good in eyes. Like these eyes are really.
Yeah, yeah. Really and, great. So, and sorry, this is the founder of Lexica, you said?
Yeah, this is the founder of Lexica.
Got it. And so just to clarify, it's, when you say we talked about feeding the model, what is he doing differently to someone else? Is it he's just giving them more high quality images you don't know? Okay, good.
They raise a lot of money. So what I believe is they're probably feeding. So what we do is like we just train the normal model on top of a few photos, but it still uses the training of the old model with our face, right? So it has understanding of something. What I believe Lexica is doing now is they're training their own model with like hundreds of thousands of high quality images. But instead of getting all the photos of the internet, he's focusing purely on really high quality photography. That's what I think he's doing. So the data set is more optimized towards what he wants to do. So I'm pretty sure his model could, for example, could not generate a Van Gogh painting, but could only make photos. Well, like the all Jack of all trades can make anything, but it's not specialized in everything.
Got it. Okay. So Jasper is more... Is Jasper the broader kind of catch-all sort of AI sort of company? And like Lexica is just like very specific use case? Is that accurate?
So I don't know. So I sold it to Jasper 1.5 years ago. Back then, we all used GPT-3 and we used the same training sets. Probably with their revenue, they now have some special privilege in OpenAI to train the model specifically. But they all basically use the same model, I think.
Yeah, okay, got it. And so I want to go into that as well because you mentioned GPT-3, OpenAI a few times. For someone who doesn't know what OpenAI is, could you explain what the hell OpenAI is? Because everyone's been talking about them for a while, but and they've been kind of heads down for a while and lots of things opened up in the last year, I guess. So what is OpenAI and are they really the ones driving a lot of this kind of upsurge in the AI side? Things.
So OpenAI is, I think they used to be a non-profit and they used to focus on open AIs, open startups providing AI to humanity. I think Elon Musk is a big investor.
Yeah, I think
Microsoft.
He used to be in maybe, yeah, I mean, I don't know if he's still involved, but I think he was definitely involved in the past.
Yeah. So I believe they were the first one. So all these massive companies, Amazon, Google, they've been training their own models, but they've been keeping it private, never exposing it to anyone. And OpenAI's mission and goal was to expose the AIs they've been training, which cost a shit ton of money. I believe they spent like $20 million just training the AIs, spending it on the GPUs to train it with. They were the first one to come out with this textual AI that we as normal humans could use at a time. So we could call them we pay them a fraction of a cent to get back something, and then we build products on top of their thing. So they launched the GPT-3 AI set, and then later, I think earlier this year, they launched the first visual AI dome, the DALL-E. It was kind of like, they call it OpenAI, but it's kind of close, because they realized, okay, this shit is way too strong. It's gonna potentially ruin the world. So we want to know who is doing what with our AI. So you had to go through this whole process. And basically now, because of the open source AI coming out, they've been gradually being more chill on it, because they realized, okay, open source is competing with our closed model.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the platform trusted by millions of entrepreneurs to create their online store and so much more. They make it simple to sell to anyone from anywhere. Whether you're selling hats like I did or houseplants, start selling with Shopify and join the platform, simplifying commerce for millions of businesses worldwide. With Shopify, you'll customize your online store to your brand, discover new customers, and build the relationships that will keep them coming back. Shopify covers all the sales channels to successfully grow your business, from an in-person POS system to an all-in-one e-commerce platform, even across social media platforms like TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. And thanks to their 24/7 support and free on-demand business courses, Shopify is here to help you succeed every step of the way. It's how every minute new sellers around the world make their first sale with Shopify, and you can too. As many of you know, I started my first business as an e-com store in the 2000s. And after all these years, there's nothing quite like that feeling when that first sale hits. You get that notification ping letting you know someone bought something from your store. It's a rush that is hard to beat. And when you're ready to take your idea to the world, you can do it with Shopify, the commerce platform powering millions of businesses down the street and around the globe. Now it's your turn to try Shopify for free and start selling anywhere. This is Possibility powered by Shopify. You can sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/creatorlab, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/creatorlab to start selling online today. That is shopify.com/creatorlab. This episode is sponsored by JustWorks. JustWorks makes it easier for you to start, run, and grow a business. Let me tell you how JustWorks can help your business. Running and scaling a business is easier when you have the right tools in place. JustWorks gives you the peace of mind in knowing that payroll will run smoothly, your team has access to high-quality benefits, and your business is getting the support it needs. JustWorks makes it simple to hire and manage remote employees across all 50 states. That's a cloud-based platform that enables managers and employees alike to quickly and securely access benefits, payroll, and other HR functionality from anywhere. An intuitive self-service user experience that makes admin easier for your whole team. Help when you need it with 24/7 expert support for you and your employees. Access to certified HR consultants who can provide tailored guidance and best practices around managing your people. Transparent pricing with no hidden costs, so you always know exactly what you're paying for. Run your business with confidence. Take a look at JustWorks transparent pricing by visiting justworks.com/pricing. That's justworks.com/pricing for details. Now let's get straight back to the show.
Okay, that's super helpful context. And so I was maybe saving this for later, but since you brought it up, you just mentioned this idea of it maybe just went way too quickly. And even, you know, there's these conspiracy theories of people have ideas of AI is going to take over the world in both a good and bad ways, right? Like, you know, can the robots essentially take over humanity because how quick things will explode. What is your opinion on that idea?
Of if robots can take over the world, or if AI is getting too strong?
I think let's go strong first, and then the next one, the one after that, is 10 out of 10 on the tinfoil hat. So let's start with the first part.
I don't know, man. It feels like, yeah, it's going super, super fast. It's not there yet, but I see it more as a extension to a human, as a AGI. I don't know what it stands for, but it's basically like, okay, it's making life easier. When I launched the headline one, everyone was complaining, yeah, this is going to kill copywriters. You know, who's the biggest audience of all these copywriting tools? Copywriters. Suddenly they don't have to, like, it's their power tool. Like, it's helping them out. And I think this is the same thing, like, now with the AI, this arty stuff, like, people say, okay, it's going to kill the artist. No, it's going to, if you're going to stay the traditional way, yeah, it might kill you, but it's going to enhance people. You can just generate like some little assets with the AI. You can put it in your bigger work. It's like, the next level kind of Photoshop, where before you had to do it all yourself, and now you have the AI to help you out and make it better. And I believe in the future, this is how I see it, like everyone is going to have their, if this gets powerful enough, it gets fast enough, everyone will have their highly specialized little helper that will help you with anything and make your life a lot easier.
I wouldn't like say, people call it AI co-pilots. I think that's what Tom was referring to it as, and I've seen some.
I'm writing only 20% of my own code. Like 80% of the code is written by GitHub Copilot. I'm getting super lazy because it knows everything I want, dude.
Isn't that crazy?
It's so good. Like, the hard things, like you just type in a description of the code and it will just output it, and 9 out of 10 times it works and I don't have to Google for it. So it removes the Google step.
Yeah, because I'm thinking when haven't done any coding for a long time, but when I was younger, I did basic stuff, internet stuff as well. And all I learned to do was copy and paste, right? And like interpret and understand on another website in a forum, ask people in a forum, and then copy and paste it over basically. But now it seems like I almost want to like just do this for fun for a little while, just to see what it's like compared to what it was like when I'd done some in the past, because it sounds insane.
So when people say, okay, it's going to replace programmers, we're going to be jobless. But no, because you as a programmer, like you will start to get more high level things. Like you're going to think out, this is how I want my application. The AI is going to output something and you know, okay, this is jack shit. This doesn't work. But if you don't know, have any understanding of programming, you just listen to the AI, your application is never going to work. But 90% of the work as a programmer is just retyping the same thing. So if you can have an AI retype that for you and you can make the little changes to it, like you can, the world's going to be better because you're going to ship your products way faster.
It's just going to make you guys faster and quicker, right? Like power users, like give you a boost. So I want to talk a bit more about examples and use cases again in a second. But since we're talking about learning, if someone is listening to this, that decision tree I mentioned earlier, they decide, actually, look, I'm technical enough, I like computers enough, I want to go and spend 6 to 12 months, like you said, minimum, just to put my head down and learn. What was that process like for you? If you were recommending today the best places to go and figure that stuff out? Because I feel like when you just type into Google, learn how to program, learn to code, there's so many things out there. And like you've probably filtered through a lot of the best stuff. So curious what helped you and what you'd recommend to someone.
So how I use a suck at school, horrible. I can only learn if something is interesting. So how I would tackle it and how I do it is like, I start a small project. For example, I learned it by building landing photos. So I'm just going to show the screen just to get a little bit of understanding. So I basically learned how to program by building this website. And in the base, like if you want to build something like this, there's many, many, many layers of what you need to do. Okay, the first one is, how am I going to display images? How am I going to get the images? How do I save the images? You need to learn how to do file uploading. You need to learn how to do databases. You need to learn how to interact with a server. So if you start a little project, you will hit those little barriers, figure out how to solve those little barriers and go to the top. So the first part for me was, okay, I need to learn, how am I going to build a web app? Well, I got lucky that I had some friends here in Bali that knew how to do it. So they gave me some direction. Okay, you can use Vue.js, you can reuse React.js, you can use whatever you want. And then you go on YouTube and you're going to find out, okay, what do I understand? So I learned a lot from Traversy Media. This guy is a godsend.
Love it.
Just get it. So I'd be like, okay, I want to learn Vue.js. It looks interesting. So this guy made a Vue.js crash course.
And so what this is called Vue.js, V-U-E-J-S.
So it's a front-end framework how to make HTML and JavaScript websites. So he just goes through, okay, this is how you set it up. This is how you use it. And then he has some examples. Okay, now we're going to make a little component. And he builds like a simple app. And if you think, okay, this is freaking hard, I don't understand it, or maybe React.js is something, he has a tutorial for that too. So what I did in the beginning is I just went through all these videos, found like a framework that I liked. I settled on Vue, I started working, and then I hit a roadblock and I was like, okay, how am I going to save things? I need to save things in the database. I asked my friends, they were like, okay, you should try MongoDB. This guy has a MongoDB crash course. So again, you watch it. If you don't know how to, because this all needs JavaScript, right? bet he has a JavaScript framework too.
Yeah,
JavaScript Crash Course. So I just use the YouTube tutorials.
YouTube, pretty much.
YouTube, like, why do you need to go to
school? There wasn't like a, you never paid for any of these, anything
free,
like that, or the, you never, there wasn't like a curriculum you're following or anything. It was just as you needed to be like, how do I upload images? Oh, I'm going to ask someone who knows. They're going to say, go check this out.
I reckon, like, if you don't have any friends that are programmers and stuff like that, a curriculum is super interesting because they will show you the things you should potentially learn.
Yeah.
Which is really good. But most of the things, if you kind of like to figure things out, I think you could go really far with YouTube.
That's amazing, man. Yeah, but that's cool. And you said that took you about 6 months. Yeah. Like, curious, how many hours a day were you learning?
4 days a week, full time, I think. Yeah, I got lucky with my freelance job 2 days a week. So they paid for my living expenses. And then for the rest, I was just learning. Done it faster if it was a curriculum instead of trying to figure it out myself. But yeah, six months, that's amazing, man. After 6 months, I was fluent enough to build a proper app. Yeah.
Good. And now you're flying with all these different products. So that's incredible. So now let's go to the next step, which was, all right, you had the idea for Landing Folio. It sounds like Landing Folio came before Headline. Headline came later. And so now we talked about profile pictures, stock images, landing pages, headlines. These are completely different use cases. So how do you think about what use case you're going to focus on and generating ideas? Because, you know, it's a very open-ended question, you know. Mm-hmm. And actually, this is one I will plug, the episode with Cortland Allen, the second half of the episode. We went through a whole business ideas framework, and I forgot the four steps, but it's basically... I thought it was one of the best frameworks I've like kind of used myself. And so, yeah, I'm curious how you think about that. Is it just you looking around at like ideas for yourself, like use cases you know already? Or, yeah, I'm curious how you were figuring out what that project could be.
Yeah, I think it's mostly scratching my own itch, because then it's fun to work on it because it solves the actual problem. So if no one buys it, I literally use it. So for the landing page one, back then there were no landing page galleries, inspiration places. So I was like, okay, I visit so many nice websites. I want a place to collect them. Maybe some other people like it. So I launched it. Didn't get any traffic for a year. And then suddenly Google started picking off. But I didn't care that much about it because I used it myself, right? So I make tools for myself.
Yeah.
The headline generator was for that too, because I had to do a lot of conversion optimization tests, which is mostly headline optimization. So we're like, what if you just write an ebook or a tool that can just make headlines really quickly? So that's basically how I come up with it most of the times. Might not be the best way if you are not able to ship really quickly, because it takes time to build it, right? And I like to just dive in, build it, and after a month I figure out, okay, this doesn't work. Okay, I waste a month. So I got lucky with Headline to be product number three to be successful.
Yeah.
But now with Profile Picture, I took 11 products to get there.
Wow. And so, and you sold it for 7 figures. So are you able to share how much revenue you were making at the time from Headline?
Yeah, I think it was public 20K a month, but it was growing really hard. It was growing. December was 5K. January was 10K. February was 20K.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it was just rocket ship. People, they could see the numbers. You're sharing them in public on Twitter. And so
I think you can still, if you scroll back 2 years, you can see it.
Yeah, I'll find it. Someone who's listening to this has found it now. And so let's say 20K a month. How do you figure out a selling price for that? Is it just based on a multiple of profits plus a premium for the fact that it's growing very quickly in a hot space? Did you have any framework for that?
Normally they say it's 4K, four times the monthly revenue if your business doesn't skyrocket. So mine was kind of skyrocketing. I got two offers. They just slid into my DM on Twitter, and Jasper was one of them. And they basically made me an offer. I told them double it. They were like, okay. And then,
and they said, okay. And that was it.
Well, I went to my, so then the thing that happens, like, you're going to think about it, because your startup grows really freaking quickly, right? So I went to my wife. I was like, these massive startups are entering this space. I'm alone. I'm literally burning out because I do customer support. I do the programming, do the marketing. I didn't have time to train anyone because every day 200 people were in my customer support. Yeah, I was tired, man. I was burned out afterwards. So it was either getting money, raise money, which I didn't want. You could bootstrap it, but I grew up in a poor family. So it's really scary to spend your own money when you get it. And you don't want to hire someone, and especially if a Dutch company, like if you hire someone, you cannot fire them. So that's a scary, scary thing.
European life. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Good luck scaling a business in Europe.
Yeah.
And then number three was, okay, cash out. You get a life-changing amount of money. And then
that was the answer.
So later again. Yeah.
And so I'm just going to add this on my notes. So I can't remember where this was. Maybe it was on the Indie Hackers post. Someone had commented something a little negative, something about you abandoning them or something like that. And you responded. I thought this is actually a great response because I think it's something that a lot of people deal with when they sell. You said acquisitions are a part of the business world. It's how a founder gets paid after working their asses off 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. One of the reasons I sold is that I got close to burnout. I worked too hard to get all the extra features, to get you all the extra features. I'd say you've been far from abandoned. You got the deal of a lifetime because you basically, that you were charging a smaller amount compared to what they would pay later, I assume. So yeah, I think that was also awesome that you wrote that because a lot of people, you know, first of all, they make it about themselves. You know, in fact, instead of saying like, oh, you're part of our community, good for you, like, you know, they kind of have their own issues to deal with there. But I thought that was very interesting. Is there anything else on that story? Do you remember you writing that and how you felt at the time? Because I think that's something a lot of people struggle with, is when you're working really hard, you get a win, and it's almost hard to celebrate in a way when stuff like that is in your ear as well. So curious what happened then.
Yeah, I got a really thick skin from this whole process at the time, because I sold a lifetime deal for $49, and which was, I think, totally worth it for the headline generator. And then I turned it into the GPT-3 style. So they paid for it, like lifetime access to it. So when I did the negotiations with Jasper, they agreed to what I wanted is, I wanted the website to stay online. So 2 years later, headline is still staying online. These people still have complete access to it. They basically have a free GPT-3 copywriter. But I think these lifetime deals, they see it as an investment because they later sell it on the black market again. So I know some headline accounts, they flipped for thousands of dollars.
That's crazy.
They purchased for $49 and they sold it. So I reckon like if you sell it as an investment and then suddenly someone sells it as an acquisition, then I can understand them. That they feel, okay, yeah, what the fuck, you sold me this product, but you sold it.
Got it, okay,
if you keep it online, then 2 years later, you get a lifetime, like for $49, one-time payment.
Yeah, I think 49 is not something to be complaining about, but that's fair. So you talked about scratching your own itch, so I think that's a great way to put it. I'm now looking forward. I'm curious to get your take on other opportunities you see, because you know you're working with this stuff every single day. You can't work on every single idea, you know. So are there certain industries, use cases you've seen that you're like, oh, that would be perfect? And so I'll give a couple examples I mentioned in Tom's one, and I'm sure someone's already working on this, but I'm just thinking out loud. I think the legal industry is really interesting to me, just because there's so much text, there's so much manual labor essentially that goes through. Where I'm right now, above my girlfriend's parents are both ex-lawyers. We were talking about this last night, and just the amount of sheer energy and time you go through just essentially reading and then summarizing. I know Trung, you know Trung as well. Mm-hmm. Trung does the pod with me. He's got him and his friend have just launched this app, I think barely.ai. They do like summaries of stuff. I've used it a little bit. It seems pretty cool. I haven't used it for like legal stuff. But I'm curious, like that seems to me something, again, not replacing a lawyer, just making their life a little easier. That co-pilot that's going to help you speed up a little extra boost so you don't work 8 hours a week, which most of my lawyer friends seem to be doing. So outside of that, I know people talk a lot about marketing, media, creating, you know, creative and stuff like that. I also worked most of my career, and my main business is paid acquisition, digital marketing. So is anyone making something with like creative? Because, you know, obviously there's images and videos, but same way you talked about landing pages. I mean, every client I've ever worked with wants, you know, as much creative testing as possible. And it seems like this, we could really train it. I'm sure someone's doing that, but curious, first of all, on that particular use case, is there someone building something good in that space? And are there any other ideas you've had over the last year or so?
Oh no, Canva just implemented the image visual, so you can generate your visuals in Canva.
Yeah.
Shutterstock is coming with their AI stock photos, so that's one. But I'm pretty sure, like, if you go niche and you specialize, like the profile pictures, there's so many opportunities. So what you say about the summarizing, so this used to be illegal, like OpenAI wouldn't allow you to feed long parts of text into their API. And I believe now they allow it, which means since then, I think that's why Trong is now allowed to do the copy, the summarizing, because you need a really long text to summarize it, right? So before you were not allowed to do it.
I think they're even doing for YouTube, because I was in a group chat with him and Jack preparing for the pod, and we were talking about, you know, YouTube basically does open captions, I think, for the subtitles essentially. Is it? Yeah. Isn't that crazy? If you just think
because OpenAI came out with Whisper, which basically listens to audio and transcribes it like one perfectly. So now you have textual that, because everything comes back to the text, right? The image comes back to the text, text comes back to the text, and now audio comes back to the text.
That's the main thing that connects them all together. Yeah.
So you can pull what you say. Yeah, you can pull the video through Whisper and it will just output the content. So what is next? You can summarize a video to like 1 minute. Like, why?
Wow.
You can do a video summarization. You could even summarize this podcast. I don't even understand why no one has done this yet. Another idea.
That's another idea. Yeah, that's, if anyone listening wants to do that, let me know. Yeah, Blinkist. And so I have mixed thoughts on this, because books especially is actually a good example. I mean, I love podcasts that summarize books, right? Like there's a few I listen to. But Blinkist I tried, but that is like written by a person pretty much, right? They read the book, they write a summary. But it's not about me here. It's like there's lots of people who want that summary of a book. So I'm sure that would be interesting. Again, I think all of this is like, sounds great until you use it. And then when you use it, it's terrible, then it's not great, right? Like if I said, here's a rocket ship that takes you to Mercury and you don't die from the sun, that sounds great, but until it's actually invented, we're not going to be able to use it. So but from your take, these are actually working pretty well, like the summary parts at least.
Yep.
So and so are there any other, and we mentioned a couple examples there, any other industries or other use cases that come to mind? If not, no worries, we can move on, but curious if anything else does.
What I would love to have, and I tried to build this 2 years ago, but I don't have the knowledge yet of it, and I think it's now possible, is I wonder when there's going to be, and just to keep it in the podcast because it's in my mental space, I think eventually there's going to be your private podcast. But basically, I can say, okay, I have the top three news items on BBC. I have the top three news items on Hacker News. Put it through Whisper, and it transcribes it, summarizes it, and then have a AI voice, which is really amazing quality right now, narrate the summary for that person and generate a personal podcast that when I wake up, it summarized the top events.
Damn,
of all the
is
things
good.
That I like.
Oh, that is very good. Because essentially, your Twitter feed or, you know, one of your social feeds, which is already interest-based, used to be social, you know, we went from social graph to interest graph. And so if you think of that, is really smart, because you can essentially feed it the way you talked about feeding the model with those profile pictures. You're feeding it through your likes or whatever, things that you already like. Damn, that is good. Because one part is you feeding it the five that you wanted to read, but it could also be more predictive and say, actually, we know that you liked these 17 things over the last week. I'm going to pull up the next one for you. So that is very smart. That would be very cool.
Just to jump to how I think the actually feature is, like right now we don't have the computer source, but we're all watching the same video on YouTube. I think in 20, 30 years, when we have an abundance of GPUs, CPUs, like everything we're going to see is going to be 100% customized and tailored to your interests, because it can.
Yeah. That's interesting. So you're saying even the content, so like let's say TikTok, which is probably TikTok and YouTube, but let's say TikTok is probably the best right now for addictive, you know, dopamine hitting content, short form. So you're saying that video that lots of people are seeing, but me and you might be friends and see obviously completely different feeds, but you're saying that video itself might just be AI generated.
Well, what is the biggest issue right now? If you have a very specific taste of a very specific niche combination, TikTok has an AI that's really good now to find the videos for you. But I guess that for some people, the content that they really want doesn't exist, maybe. So if AI, if TikTok's AI already knows what your specific interest is and they could make the content for you, why would they need the creators? And this is this is like future part. But I mean,
yeah,
it's 2020, we have visual AI. This is like, it's not a crazy thing to think about. So
yeah, very
all these social
that's
medias,
a cool
they
idea.
Might not even need the content providers anymore because they can provide the content themselves.
Yeah, that's interesting. I could see a segment at least that being, I don't know, personally, I don't know if that would replace all entertainment, let's say, but I would say definitely there would be a strand of entertainment, whether that's on a particular app or whatever, where it is like tailored to you, you're opting in, you're going to see, and you know it's kind of made up stuff or whatever. Because the truth is, if you think about what I'm seeing on a TikTok feed, I don't know 99.9% of the people I'm, you know, seeing their videos from. If that was the same as those profile pictures you showed me before, they look like real people to me. And so if that real person, in air quotes, was talking on the video, well, that is interesting.
I bet you're already watching 1%. Do you know these videos where it's basically a Minecraft video game in the background, and then there's a Reddit post on top of it, and it gets narrated?
Yeah.
So that's an open source script that's generated by AI. So it just pulls the top content of Reddit, narrates it, posts like 1,000 videos on TikTok, and then the top 5%... gets sent to you and you watch it.
Wait, okay, I didn't know that was AI generated,
man. Yeah,
that is hilarious. Yeah, I know the AI voice. I didn't actually think about where that was coming from.
It's just a guy who has a server farm somewhere that just pulls in content and videos and outputs it automatically to TikTok.
Wow.
And then a few things if we go viral.
That is wild. Yeah, okay, I love the idea. So I'm trying to group these into a couple categories. One is creating new stuff. Another one is summarizing. Like, those seem to be two very good, you know, kind of like umbrellas here. I know we're going to hit our time soon. So this has been super interesting, man. This has been very cool to hear all these examples. That was kind of forward looking. The last thing I kind of wanted to get your take on was you shared a few of the best examples, especially the ones you're working on. Are there other things in this space that you're seeing that we didn't get a chance to talk about yet that might not be just a basic text or just current use cases or examples, even if they're just fun, wacky projects that we could maybe give a shout out to?
There's one I really like. Let me share my screen. It's also on Twitter. So this guy is generating video game assets with AI right now. This is all AI generated. So basically,
these are in a game.
Well, this is, you could potentially use this. So what I believe he's building right now is just a massive library of content assets you could use for your video game. So like towers. So if you, because I think like the hardest thing for a video game developer right now is you need designs, right? So if you are a indiepreneur and you don't know how to design as a video gamer, like you can now purchase those assets and put it in your games.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. Jesus Christ, man.
So I think like the next few months, you're going to see a lot of highly specialized dream booth that's just specialized on one thing, build a nice GUI on top of it. And then eventually Adobe is going to purchase them all and just put it into one tool.
Dude, this is wild. So, I mean, what I would love to say from my side is, you know, a lot of the podcasts I've talked for many years on all the emerging trends, right? In that time, there's been all the buzzwords, 3D printing, AI, VR, AR, Web3, et cetera, right? And like all of them, all of those things, they're buzzy for a reason, right? Like they do have cool things. I will say this AI stuff, just the fact that it's in so many, there's so many use cases, and it's very exciting. It's very, very exciting stuff. So man, thanks you so much for explaining a lot of that to me in simple terms. To a dummy like me, this has been really, really helpful. And hopefully for people listening, this has been a cool way to see, like the real use cases and how you could potentially be a part of it, create your own stuff as well. I want to send people to where they should follow you and all the different projects. So we can share all of these in the show notes as well, so you don't have to write them down if you're listening to this. But it was profilepicture.ai, stockai.com, landingfolio.com, and your Twitter will have a bunch of these as well. But is there anything you'd especially want people to do?
No, that's mostly it. Just follow me on Twitter. Send me a DM if you need some help with something. I try to read it. Sometimes a bit of a mess in the inbox, but it's at Danny Postma with a double A at the end. And generate your profile picture with AI. It's amazing.
That's it, man. And just to clarify, people just pay for that each time, right? How's that work?
Yeah, it's. I'm trying to bring down the fees now because I finally got the GPU to be cheaper. But it's $90 now for Black Friday deal until Friday for $19.
Love
it. Use your cat, dogs, whatever.
Love it. And just okay, cool. Either way, yeah, we'll share that link and people should go to check it out. Thanks again, Danny, for coming on the show. Hopefully, we'll get to do this in person at some point when I'm in Asia or we're both in Europe or New York or something. That'll be fun. I'm glad we got to connect. And yeah, appreciate you sharing all that today.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I had a blast.
Cheers, Danny. Nice one. See you next time. Bye-bye. Hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. You can also watch all of these visually, plus bonus clips on youtube.com/creatorlabfm. If you enjoyed the show, let me know what you think. You can say hello to me on Twitter. I'm at BZaidi, BZAIDI, or creatorlabfm on any other channel. I really appreciate it. Helps spreading the word with your friends and colleagues. It helps to get this out to more people and allows me to get better guests for you guys. And lastly, if you want access to exclusive content and free giveaways like the recent books that we gave out, make sure you're subscribed to the email list. I'll send out an occasional email with lessons learned from the episode. So if you're interested in that, and of course the free giveaways, who doesn't like those, go to creatorlab.fm/subscribe. Until then, I'll see you on Twitter and speak to you next week.